Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 262, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness.
Okay.
About to get a little more difficult to take a deep dive because Twitter is a going away. So, I don't know. We're going to have to do real research or some shit.
Nah, just go to Parler, like Gab. Truth Social. They got other ones.
That's where the unfiltered shit is, right?
That's where the real shit's at. And you know what?
You.
Listeners, you're going to love the new sound of this show. Okay?
In the following weeks.
We heard a lot of stuff we weren't really thinking about.
Wow. Can't really share that with you. Just new thoughts coming in.
New thoughts, man. Completely, you know, antithetical to all my beliefs.
Hey, Miles, it's Monday, November 7th,
yes.
2022.
Yes.
I don't know why I'm saying that like Blake Shelton, but what is that the dude's name from The Voice? Blake Shelton.
Yeah. Who was like, Hey, all right, man. Yeah, I like that. November 7th, International Merlot Day. National Canine Lymphoma Awareness Day.
Okay.
And this is really specific, National Bittersweet Chocolate with Almonds Day.
Mm. Yeah, I do know that. I think that one was created by my mom. Shout out to my mom.
Really?
She loves a good bittersweet chocolate with almonds.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I love that. I love that.
There must just be a strong group identity around that one.
Yeah, I'm just like Canine Lymphoma Awareness Day. Like, what? This is new, right? Because I feel like, in our parents' age, they're just like, yeah, I'm the vet for what?
Right.
And then animals just like we have like huge growths and they're like, oh, that's Lumpy's bump. He's fine. And they're like, it's a tumor. You know what I mean? And it's just funny how much with technology and I guess the ease of treatment now we're like, oh, my, because like right now my dog got a heart murmur.
Yeah.
Before, I remember growing up, my dog probably had so much wrong with it. But back then it was like, God, I spent fucking $300 right now because the dog's sneezing and shit. But now I don't know. Maybe my heart is bigger.
I mean, you met medical Finn. Condition. You won't be surprised to know that he had a heart murmur from day one.
He did.
He was a medical miracle that he lasted.
What was he on a scale of six?
10 years.
4 to 6. 5 out of 6.
Oh, he was remember? All the way. All the way.
Six
up.
Out of six?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was bad okay. News. Anyway, yeah. So it's just interesting to think of like how much more we think about like our own animal care than like previous generations did. Because I'm like, the example I had was just let it ride. But I get that now. We have interventions. Yes, yes, yes.
Have we talked about the like really dark period in U.S. history right at the like, I think it was when the U.S. first got into World War II, where they were like, okay, so what you have to do is ration your dairy, ration like other foodstuffs, and execute your dogs so they're not taking up any additional resources.
I remember milk rationing.
Yeah. There was also a dog rationing, like dog execution wave that went around because they were just like, they're taking up too much resources, folks.
Shout out to the people who were like, you know what? Let's just wait to see how this goes before we start.
Yeah.
Often, you know,
I probably would have been hiding my dog away. Anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I'm gonna take a shit. Dun, 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 dun. The Seven Nation Army couldn't hold this crap. They're gonna bag it up. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh.
Try to sell it right out behind my back. And I'm talking to myself at night because I can't quite grasp. If they're selling vagina candles, why not sell some of my Mountain Dew ass?
Ooh.
That is courtesy of Lex Lugie, Mr. Lugubrious.
Yes.
About a story that I wasn't here for. But
yeah, the Goop. It was the Goop when it's gift guide. And there was literally a $75 bag of shit in it.
Yeah, there
bespoke
was.
Bespoke manure.
Did they have like the vintage, the
no, they
provenance?
Just said
were they like, this is from somebody who eats a vegan diet? And
no, it's they said it was like from like chickens and horses and donkeys and shit, like at some fucking ranch or something. And I'm like, what the fuck? $75 for like bespoke shit is like
bespoke poop.
No.
Yeah.
And there's like a $300 joint rolling machine that I just could not get behind because it had like Nespresso pods for the weed, so you couldn't even put your own flour in it, and you were like buying their fucking mid-ass shit. Nah, for 300? Nope. Sorry.
I could definitely see a Sharper Image style $300 joint rolling machine, but like,
you could
have to source your weed from Sharper
to put
Image
a pod
is
no.
So whack.
No. And plus, like, it feels like with like Instagram, like, you know, apps like, or you know, as technology gets better, we sort of democratize all these skills. It's like, hey, even if you don't have a camera, you can actually take really cool pictures because shit, you know, is helping shit look better in a lot of ways. And I feel like I developed the skills to twist up fucking in any situation, inside of a jacket, inside of a backpack. It could be raining. I could gut a blunt and fucking twist something up like gone in 60 seconds. Maybe actually technically like 45. But so when I see those machines, I feel like a Luddite.
Could you just pull your sleeve down over your hand and roll a joint inside the sleeve? One-handed?
Damn, I could.
That's something I want to see.
I probably could. Depends on how fine the grind is. Anyway.
I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
When you're not MGK, but you still are we. When how are you get to Lambo speed? When you're chilling with Her Majesty, podcast not rated first. Site host makes me bones. Less broke than Alex Jones. And co-host Jack will drink dew. Boom, 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 boom. Podcast, second rate. You simply must do it. It is great. Okay, there it is. Thank you to the bro. You did it. Fix You by Coldplay. Fantastic.
I don't know. Fix You.
No?
Is that Ladder?
Dear stream.
Ladder Coldplay?
Your... Dude, that shit was like every promo for like a big event would play Fix You because there was like the beat, like the end part that's like.
Well, okay, yeah, I know that.
Like that part, you don't remember that? All right.
Not it's not coming to me based off of your vocal interpretation over Zoom.
Okay. how about this part? They're coming out of boom, boom, cop. And then they come out calm, just piano, Chris Martin. Lights will guide you home and ignite. You don't know this shit?
Uh-uh.
Your bones. All right, forget it.
I'll listen to it and I'll be like, oh!
I'm playing myself singing this much Coldplay. Well done, Jack. You fucking walked me right into the trap.
You know I wasn't going to admit to knowing Coldplay. It's too on brand for me.
Got me.
Make me look
he
like
admitted.
A fool.
He just set me up.
Nice try, asshole. Nope, I've never even heard of Coldplay. Anyways, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the host of How to Do the Pot, a podcast demystifying cannabis for women. Please welcome back to the show, Ellen Scanlon!
Ellen!
Hi, I'm so happy to be here again.
Oh, yeah, thrilled to have you back. Thanks for coming back. What's new? How are you doing?
I'm good.
Do you have the goop joint roller?
I don't have the goop joint roller. I'm sort of a pre-roll buyer. Sorry, Miles.
See, no, I buy pre-rolls too because there are ones that are, this is the thing. I usually wouldn't buy pre-rolls because the flower that was in pre-rolls was just like the casted off shake and like not
the weed equivalent of chicken McNuggets.
Pink goo. Like I'm trying to eat chicken tenders, you know, real meat. So I would always buy the flower and roll my own. But now there's a lot of pre-rolls that are pretty potent. Yeah. But also there's some trouble because these dudes in California like sued this company because they're like, yo, you're lying about the percentages on your fucking pre-rolls. Because that is another
huge thing. You are hiding a percentage.
You are hiding a less potent pre-roll behind these numbers. But yeah, Ellen, I feel like a lot of people when they go into dispensaries, shorthand is like how high the percentage is. But I've also experienced things like that, that percentages aren't necessarily indicative of how I'm going to, you know, take that in. How do you determine, you know, what pre-roll is right for you?
Well, I think the first thing that I learned after being in the industry for a while is that sativa indica hybrid is not really going to help you very much. And it's tough because that's kind of what's available and that's the classification and that's usually how people will start. But it's more of a signal, I think. Like if you say, I want an indica, the bud tender is sort of triangulating that to say, like, this person wants to chill out. This person wants to be mellow.
Sativa,
you want something energizing.
Have intrusive thoughts, in my case.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I tell them how I want to feel. Yeah.
You just go in with a handful of cash and you're like, hi, I'd like one happy, please.
A happy, giggly day, please. Yeah. No stress.
And one mild panic attack.
That was my order. Damn, I shouldn't have ordered that. That's what fucked me up.
Yeah.
When I used to smoke weed.
I'd like to just be chill and not panicked. Oh, okay. Well, then you should go to this side of the store. Oh, fantastic.
So I start there and then we created this list of the 12 essential strains that we think, you know, everyone should have in their stash. And you don't have to have all 12, but maybe two or three. And so I kind of use that as a guide. Like, you know, if you like OG Kush, then tell them that. If you like a strain, then usually I say, I like that. What else do you have? I have some brands now that I like too. So I get a little brand specific, but it's tough. I mean, walking in, it's like you are a kid in a candy store, but there's so much candy and you don't really know what any of it tastes like. And so it's a little bit hard. The shopping part is still evolving, I think.
For sure.
When are we going to start getting days, international days for a specific strain the way that, what was the wine that had?
Yeah, Merlot Day.
Merlot Day is today, which like, no matter what kind of wine you drink, the drunk is the same. I know like alcoholics like to be like, no, actually I was white wine drunk and was feeling very bubbly. I don't believe any of that shit. But like weed is much more different. It should have more like knowledge of the strains than
for sure
all the knowledge around different wine types.
Yeah.
I mean, where is our fucking OG Kush holiday? I proclaim August 18th, 818. As OG Kush Day to celebrate the OG Kush growers of the San Fernando Valley. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we've been trying to get an international day together. Let's do it. 818. 818.
There
OG Kush Day. I won't be there able to partake, but you know,
you don't need to.
I'd love to give you a candy cigarette.
You can have a candy cigarette next to me. How about
you.
That, champ? Yep.
Drink a little grape juice and have a nice candy cigarette.
And I'll sip, and I'll be sipping lean and smoking a blunt.
All right, Ellen, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. We're talking this Harvard study. It's a study from two Harvard professors that was published in like a MIT outlet, but it just went really hard on this idea that there's a path towards a better society through just an all-time doubling down on police. Like more 500,000 more police force would be
that'll do it.
Do the body good in America.
A fucking joke.
And so Alec Karakatsanis, you know, just went took a closer look. I think it is one of the big pillars of like one of the early things that I learned about like what things having liberal versus conservative bias. One of the big things, first things I learned was, well, academia has a very liberal bias the media has a very liberal bias. And I think this is a good opportunity for us to just look at that idea that there is a liberal bias to anything. I mean, there might be like a neoliberal bias, but it's definitely not a leftist bias, which I think a lot of people assume that those two are interchangeable. So we'll talk about just academia being a complete shit show. We'll talk about Oprah coming through, endorsing Fetterman. We'll ask the question, is that too little too late? I don't really have anything on this, but is Twitter just like over? Like, is that it?
I don't know. I think we're watching it. I think we're just sort of like, yo, this shit might fucking blow up.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are just kind of like waiting like at the threshold to be like, okay, all right, yep.
There goes. So I'm just curious to hear like, you know, you guys' thoughts on like, where will that energy go? What does a post-Twitter world look like? The what now of it all. So we'll get into that.
Yeah.
Plenty more. But first, Ellen, we do like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history?
This morning, I was searching the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco because I am going this afternoon to see the Faith Ringgold exhibit. During COVID, I really missed being like in the presence of art. And so since I've been able to do it, I've been trying to get back there. And since COVID also, all these big museums are finally putting women into their big exhibit. There have been three that I've seen like in the past year, which is a lot, women artists that I'd never seen exhibited. So Faith Ringgold is 91 years old, which also kind of is the path for some of these women artists. Like when they get their big show, they're really, really old. But I can't wait to go. She's super cool. I found out about her a few years ago because she did a collaboration with Vans. And I bought them for my husband. Then I learned she writes children's books. And my son really loves one of her books. And so, yeah, that's what I was just working on, what the hours are and see if I can get there.
Yeah.
It
is so wild. Like when you look at the percentages of like arts, like art galleries and things, how little, like how it's mostly men. Like it's absurd how much, how male dominated, like, you know, quote unquote, fine art is. But yeah, it's nice to see them trying to put
it's
someone on.
It's so much more interesting. You know, these three exhibits of these women, I saw Joan Mitchell, I saw Judy Chicago. They were all at either the SF MoMA or the DeYoung, which are the biggest museums in San Francisco. And they were just so different than anything else I'd seen, but they were contemporaries of artists that you know. So it's kind of looking, just creating more context, I think, around what art was at that time, where it's going, where it can go. So yeah, I'm really excited to go this afternoon.
An artist friend of mine, she was coming to town and staying with us, and she was like, all right, I'm going. Like, she spends hours whenever she gets to a town, just like, she like blocks off a whole day to go to the museum. And she's like, yeah, that's like going to church for me. Like, that's what I do. And that was just like a good thing for me to hear, to be like, yeah, that's like, you need to do that for your soul, for like, you know, to like go see art, be in the presence of art.
Yeah, the presence of it was, I mean, the first time that I went to a museum after COVID, I literally came out and I felt different. Like, it's like the first time that you got to see friends after such a long wait. You're with them, and like an hour later when you're by yourself, you're like, whoa, I just feel different. And that's really how I felt after that first museum trip. So seems like a good thing to keep doing.
Yeah. It's also like, there's a really like the moment when you look at an art piece and you begin just thinking at all about it. That's the whole point of going, you know, like when you don't give yourself that opportunity, you really miss out on a lot of like introspection or just like trying to see through an artist's eyes, like what they thought was interesting. So, yeah, I definitely usually when I go any place, I also try and see like at least one museum to see like what they're working with.
Yeah, what they're inspired by. You know, I think that's kind of what's cool about it, because if you can walk out and this is what this city has chosen, it kind of has like the vibe of the city. And the De Young Museum's in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. So it's like a very magical place. And, you know, cannabis can be a pretty good match if you're going to a museum and wanting to hang out. So you can kind of enhance your experience. I'm a big believer that, you know, matching the weed to what you want to do is like just this chef's kiss of cannabis.
Right.
For me, yeah, I definitely recommend
edibles
it.
With art is my thing.
I don't
like to smoke or vape before I go. Like, I prefer to, I need headphones. I need fully charged headphones and a couple bites of an edible and I'm ready to see some art.
Yeah, yeah. What's something you think is overrated?
Okay, the thing I think is really overrated is prescription sleep aids and prescription sleep medicine. And I'd learned about this not because I have terrible insomnia, but because cannabis is helping so many people sleep. And I have talked to people whose doctors give them these very strong medications and then tell them, like, it's kind of going to stop working, so you're going to have to take more. And right. These people are like, excuse me?
So much of Western medicine is that. Yeah. I mean, that was the opioid issue too.
Exactly. And so sleep is an issue that, you know, I think everyone can relate to having a bad night of sleep, whether it happens to you multiple times a week or like once every once in a while. It's brutal. And I talk to a lot of people who say, you know, Ellen, I don't really like weed, but I take an edible every night to sleep and it's changed my life. So I think that it's something that I'm hoping that sort of just like it not being a great medicine will open people up to the idea that maybe another plant could help you out and that cannabis could be that plant. And it's a little more complicated with cannabis because unlike just taking a pill and kind of your body just goes into some form of rest, whether it's like zombie rest or not, I think is something we can talk more about. But with weed, you have to know whether you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. And there are different types of cannabis that you take for those two sleep issues. But once you figure that out...
That's too much thought to put into it. Just give me the pill. Just give me the pill. Knock me out. Just hit me over the head.
Wait,
you have to
that.
Like know yourself and like ask... do some thinking about something as important as your health. That's interesting, though.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, the questions aren't that hard.
Yeah, I mean,
I bet they are for some people. I bet they're. Yeah. I bet plenty of people are like, shut up, because that's what there's just a lot of medicine is moving towards the direction of like, you know, having a more integrated approach that involves the patient being treated as a responsible person and human being who is like involved in their own recovery, as opposed to the past where they were treated like a consumer who you were trying to just, you know, get to pay you money and become a loyal subscriber to your pharmaceutical company. They were onto the subscription economy before a lot of us were, you know.
For real. It's just wild though to see, like, you know, to your point, Ellen, like, because like there's so many medicinal qualities of like cannabis or like psilocybin or like MDMA, and like we're just like, because of the fucking drug war, it's like, I don't know, first of all. And also I'm sure it's the drug wars incentivized because pharmaceutical companies like don't like figure out something that's like safer and cheaper and like, let's just not do that, right? But to even see like how, like, generationally, like, I see more of my parents who are like boomers and stuff who or maybe like real straight growing up now are having things like reconstructive hip and knee surgeries, and they absolutely don't want to take fucking opioids at all. Like, they just can't handle it. And like, I had a friend of mine who's like, dad was like really hesitant because he had this very like 70s, 60s view of like pot for hippies and like, I don't need to be an idiot or whatever. Then started taking edibles and he's like, I'm so sorry that I did not like just take, try and dissolve that perception to sort of see what the possibility was. And it's not necessarily for everybody, but it's also, it's good for that, for people to even be open to see, hey, this could be an option.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of science about this because cannabis is still a Schedule I drug, although this is what Biden just talked about potentially changing. But pain and sleep, there just really is a lot of evidence that cannabis can help with those two things. And So people, especially older people who are taking a lot of medications, dealing with the side effects of like medication A, not liking medication B and all of that, you know, if you can remove even one or two, like, maybe it's a topical pain cream instead of a painkiller. Maybe it's for sleep. And just limiting the number of pills you're putting in your body, I feel like that's something that I have seen just be a major improvement for my own life and a lot of other people's too.
Yeah. And the problem with cannabis is that people can grow it themselves, whereas a pharmaceutical from Merck or Purdue was made in a lab, and there's a big barrier of entry. And so,
I mean, I got a lab in my garage. I can, what you want?
But you also might blow yourself up or kill yourself.
That was time because I was trying to make butane.
Miles, we're not having this conversation again.
Okay.
We're not.
Okay.
Okay. But, there's money to be made. It's the whole, just think about America as like one big profitability bias, and it suddenly makes complete sense.
And yeah, it's also wild too. More and more people I know like to just microdose psilocybin now instead of drinking. Like, people are just like, I can have a little bit of psilocybin and I'm having like I'm more like social and I have a good time and I don't wake up with like being feeling like shit or anything. In fact, I feel fantastic and like all X, Y, and Z. So it's just weird how even like people are trying to just in their own ways are discovering like even shit that normally like when you're in high school, like I did shrooms once and I lost my mind are now like, yeah, man, like a little nibble here, like was actually I enjoyed Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Even more.
If you took 10 Tylenol, you also might not feel so great. You know, like it's actually way more fun to do to macro dose mushrooms. But I mean, like that's the. There are smaller, more responsible doses of these drugs that actually can be very helpful. Yeah. Ellen, what is something you think is underrated?
Okay, the thing I think is underrated is how much it matters what your state elected official's position is on cannabis. So tomorrow is election day, and national polls tell us that 90% of Americans believe that cannabis should be legal for medical or for adult use. It's about like 60-ish percent on recreational use and 30% on medical. So that's one of the most popular issues that exists in our country right now. But you really have to pay attention down the ballot. Like, what are your senators? What are your representatives feel about weed? Because in California, for instance, where cannabis has been legal for adult use since 2016, still today, 60% of California is dry with weed. There are no retail stores because of the decisions of the local officials. And So it really, really matters if you're voting to just take 2 seconds. And if you care about weed, and look and see how your local elected officials, state officials, what they believe about weed.
And if I had to guess, the other things that those local officials object to are also not going to be people who listen to this podcast, like favorite or least favorite positions, you know, like I feel like the way that you get to actually I'm against weed is by like being in league with the local Chamber of Commerce and shit like that. That is bad for overall like.
Or like, yeah, real estate, where they're like, you don't want a weed shop on this block?
Come on, a bunch of weed heads.
It's like, I actually do. So but what the Jack, fuck are we talking
about?
To
your point on the profitability bias, if you want to know what I think is driving legalization, it's jobs and it's tax revenue.
Yeah.
So nearly 500,000 people work in weed. That's a lot of jobs. There are 3 times more cannabis workers than there are dentists in the U.S. So if you know a dentist, you probably know somebody working in weed. You know, legal states have brought in $10 billion in tax revenue since legalization, Colorado, the first state in 2014. So like from a profitability bias standpoint, if you want jobs, if you want tax revenue, if you want money, I think that's what's kind of making the cannabis election more interesting for me to watch, because I would have agreed with you that like things are just straight down the middle and people who believe in civil rights believe in weed, but people who like money also believe in
weed.
When
Mitch when Mitch McConnell started thawing on like hemp, I was like, oh,
John Boehner is on the board.
The second he's like, all right.
At this point, I feel like, the cow is out of the barn, right? I think I used that right. Like it's that I think for a long time, the profitability thing was what was holding it back. And they were like, well, it's more profitable for us to have this war on drugs. Overall, there's more money in the war on drugs than there is in legal weed. And then that was proven incorrect, I think, with the explosion of the cannabis industry and like people realizing actually like it's not just going to be young people who like to get high who need to use this. Like it's going to be very popular with everybody because it's actually a very helpful drug, which you would have found out if you had bothered to study it.
It's medicine, Jack. You know what I mean? Let's move past that. But I think the other part too is like you look at those like conservative politicians, they're probably like, well, yo, that's money we don't have to put into taxes on like our donors. It's like, how about this all revenue? Like, cause then you don't have to, I'm sure for people like, I don't want to raise taxes. Well, how about this? How about 50 million in like annual revenues for that? Like that's what Hawaii is projecting if they were legalizing cannabis there. And like in recently in Massachusetts, weed overtook cranberries as fucking main crop there.
I can't think of a state that more needs to smoke weed.
Well, the reason that alcohol prohibition ended is because of the Great Depression and all of the states, and everyone was like, whoa, there's a lot of money that we're not getting here. And so I think that there's sort of a playbook for this, like the history rhymes concept that, you know, this recession, the deeper it gets, whatever it turns into with all these challenges, these states are suddenly realizing that having an extra, you know, I think Washington State, which has been legal since 2015, brings in $400 million a year. Not a big state, you know, that's a lot of money.
A lot of rain, though.
Hey, great fries, though. Shout out Dick's Drive-In.
You really are taken by those fries,
Jack,
man.
We're going to do a live show in Seattle, and I think we'll just do it from a parking lot at Dick's Drive-In.
And it's just going to be you and me.
Yeah. I'm just getting high. I'm like, and that's what I'm saying, Jack. Like, these fucking fries, man. Ew. This isn't a live show.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back. And yeah, this is just off of Alec Carrick at Santa's tweet. Miles and I were like, oh man, we have to have this guy back in. Keep quoting his threads. But
just windmilling on police propaganda.
Yeah, he's really good at bringing out like some of the things I wouldn't have caught. Like, I know I seem like super fucking smart, but I don't pay attention to every study that Harvard releases. Nope. And they're just generally, there's a pervasive myth that I bought into for like, you know, when I was young and building my worldview, that like higher learning institutions have a liberal bias, and presumably it's the same liberal bias that caused mainstream media to remain allergic to socialism in any large, you know, statewide or nationwide races, give the benefit of the doubt and frequently the benefit of the only source we checked with to the police. But yeah, Ivy League institutions in particular, like, just seem so irrevocably tied to wealth accumulation and wealth protection. Harvard has a $53 billion endowment that they just keep growing like it's a fucking hobby. Like, right. It's we talked about earlier last week that when like the people are talking about affirmative action and they're saying these Ivy League institutions, like, you know, need to stop using affirmative action because now they're discriminating against Asian students, and that gives, that it ignores that, like, they give so many spots to people who would not get in if they weren't related to people who went there, or the children of extremely wealthy people on the dean's list. And, you know, hint, you get on the dean's list by giving absurdly huge amounts of money to the school. But yeah, I don't know. And then like on the other end of that, like the smart kids I know who went to Ivy League schools, like all ended up in some sort of like finance job, like somehow related to the accumulation of wealth, the growth of wealth. And it just feels like they treat, like a lot of the Ivy League people I know treat any skepticism towards finance or like not treating finance as like the only serious thing and like something that just necessarily undergirds like how the world works is treated as like a, you know, as unserious or like childish, basically. Yeah,
it's dismissive. Like, well, yeah, I mean, the whole thing of like liberal or whatever in these Ivy League schools, just look at where senators fucking go to college.
Yeah,
on Ted either Cruz. Side, you're not going to be like, oh man, what, Ted Cruz went to Harvard? Oh, what, let's fucking
Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. Right. I mean, like, it's the you know, like that those places end up just, they're just like finishing schools for capitalists. They're not, you're yeah. not like, I mean, that's you right. can study other things there, but a lot like the pathway that we do see, especially as it relates to like, especially this article, it's like the most backwards take on like our carceral system. But like, yeah, it's proven that cops, more cops isn't equating to more safety, but our suggestion is a 500,000 more, I think also demonstrates just how much of, you know, the capitalist finishing school or whatever is more just about like maintaining status quo and not figuring out how to just keep that alive through these like really disingenuous analyses.
Yeah. Yeah. So the claims of this paper from two Harvard professors that got published by MIT, the U.S. has way more prisoners than any other country. Okay. That's undeniably true. Good start. Yep. And two, way fewer cops. And then three, that is bad because prisons bring little benefit for their costs. And four, cops bring big benefits for their costs. So I think they have an issue with the odd or the even numbers there. So yes, the U.S. has way more prisoners than other countries. And like all the charts in their article, like have just all of the shocking numbers are on the U.S. has way too many prisoners, and they have about the same, even by their standards that they admit to in it. It's like they're still within the normal range of developed countries in terms of number of cops. I think doing their statistical analysis, they thought they had arrived at a conclusion that there are like, they're on the low end. You would think the U.S. was on the high end. The U.S. is actually on the low end when it comes to number of police. So Alec Karykatsanis, former guest, reached out to them and was like, hey, like, what are your numbers from here? Because this like doesn't match up with mine. And the professor admitted privately over email that the U.S. census count is actually 1.22 million police. That's 76% higher than the number they chose to use in their public article.
Which would mean that it's over the median amount. Like it actually,
yeah, and that puts America over the median. Yeah.
Right.
So now their two first things are the U.S. has way, way, way more prisoners than any other, you know, developed or any other Asia period. And slightly more police officers. So
is what they should have said rather than saying we got more prisoners and we don't have enough cops. And like he's even pointing out, he's like, they admitted that they even used this like really deflated number to anchor their point that there is a gap that needs to be filled. And like without even counting things like private police, which you'll, depending on where you live, you've probably seen it. You see them in like certain areas, like with these like very cop looking people who have like weapons and things are also like, oh, so this is private law enforcement over here too. Those numbers aren't counted. There's just a lot of it really just shows also too, like how breathlessly people will also just say, oh, these two Harvard professors did this, retweet, or republish.
Yeah, of course.
And continue to sort of spread that narrative.
And they are basing their research on like a single study, whereas all of the like so they're basing the second part of their thing, which is that and the police are a self-evidently good investment of public funds. They're investing or they're resting that on a single study that found that there are many like meta studies that take all the studies about this and have found that actually more police does not equate to more crime. And also all of these studies don't take into account the crimes committed by police.
Which is
a shocking amount. Every time we take a look under that rock, there is a shocking amount of crimes being committed by the police.
Right. And we even talked about how like in Minneapolis, the police are like bankrupting the city because of all their like fuckery and having to settle with like citizens for like all their like, you know, malfeasance.
It's
what's that cost too? Is that in the analysis?
That's another point that he does a good job of driving home is that it's not just that like police are a terrible instrument. It's that they are also like they are a very sophisticated apparatus for fighting against any sort of social progress that is going to upset the current system that we have, which is, as to quote Joe Biden when he was trying to like argue for more police, where the police are like your priest and your what did he say? He was like counselor psychiatrist, like all these different jobs. Like the police are the only people that we give money to do any of those things. And the police unions are very sophisticated. The police unions, police lobbies, police PR, all are very sophisticated at fighting any sort of, you know, changing of how we invest to support social programs, progressive social policy. Like, they know that that means that we are less reliant on police, and therefore they fight against that. They physically intimidate, like pull over family members of politicians who support that sort of thing. And they've been doing it for 120 years at least. I mean, they were like, the foundation of the police was as a runaway slave, like hunting force. So it's not just that more police would lead to more arrests. And like, what the fuck are you even talking about with this being the solution to?
We need more arrests.
Right. They admit that this would lead to more arrests. And they're like, that is a downside. It's like, no, but the problem you're trying to solve is that there are too many arrests and too many people in prison. What the fuck are you even talking about? It's such a wild, like, just misguided, not serious argument. But it's put forward. And so that's where, like, my thoughts on like Ivy League institutions and just academia, like, come from, is just that it's so inconceivable that, like, in like people who subscribe to the scientific method would get to a place where this sort of idea could even be like put down seriously, and like put a place where they publish it, and then like a person asks like very basic questions, they're like, yeah, I mean, we hate it, we don't like the study, and like none of this really makes sense to us either. And it's like, well, then who the fuck are you working on behalf of? Like,
police lobby.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, because
they'll use this study. I mean, like, municipalities will use this study to bolster their argument that this is the solution, and they'll be able to pound the table and say, to Harvard professors in their analysis said, even at Harvard,
yeah,
okay, they're saying that the solution is to increase the police presence across the country. And the one thing that's positive is like that the story like somewhat evolved to the point where like more people are now like at like openly questioning these two professors, like even at Harvard, and they're like, what? Yeah. What's going on exactly? Like, this is because apparently this was sent out like to disseminate it to students, like right around the time of George Floyd's murder.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, yeah, and we know everyone's hurting. You should maybe check this thing out too. Like, there's a lot of ways we can move forward with this. And that is so fucking.
Because that was the answer to the Black Lives Matter movement that the mainstream media wanted to go with and ultimately did go with, is like, yeah, but police are necessary. They're our only answer. And so we just got to double down on police because crime's going to go up if we even question or protest against the police, which, by the way, there's new statistics that show there's no rise in crime. So, yeah, the whole thing, like the liberal, in quotes, media bias, the liberal bias of mainstream institutions, like, they are all part of the same thing. There are probably a lot of, maybe even a majority of left-leaning people who work at these institutions, but the financial incentives, the structures in place, like Harvard's president for 5 years was Larry Summers, who is like an economist who was like while he was the Harvard's president, like flew on the Lolita Express and is like a, you know, just a finance stooge who like believes everything that like is just a mouthpiece for the finance industry and like trickle down economics and shit like that. Like, he's just the most, you know, and Harvard's fucking, what's it called? Dowry or whatever.
Endowment.
is basically a dowry, is like $53 billion. Like, that,
right.
it doesn't, like, they tell you everything you need to know. The only people telling you that they have a leftist bias are right-leaning people who are good at this shit. Like, that's another thing that, like, I'm just tired of, like, people being like, well, the people on the right are idiots. No, they're good at the lie that they're telling, and, like, they're succeeding at convincing people. And, like, we need to take it seriously. And, like,
well, I mean, their strategy is to be as cynical as possible.
Yeah.
And, like, and very intentionally. I think the issue is the only way to combat that isn't to, like, do the Democrat version of cynicism. It's to actually begin telling the fucking truth.
Yeah.
Because that's different than just pointing to all these fucking racist myths and shit. And you can say, you know what is actually going to, like, help us are X, Y, and Z that doesn't conform to, like, what the defined platform is of, you know, like the DNC or whatever at the moment.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I think the one, again, I like that despite that, right, there are still, even like the kids that are like at Harvard are also, at least there's, it doesn't seem like all the students are like, we stand with our professor's analysis. Like, the students are somewhat starting to begin to be like, this is not good work at all, and our other faculty. But what that means in terms of, like, the publication and the damage that's been done, and who knows what many how many decisions have been made based off of that.
Yeah, like, as someone who, you know, just like having been in the professional world and met a lot of people from, like, supposedly elite universities, and, you know, people from, like, not elite universities, and some people, like, I've never once checked on a resume, like, what someone's educational background is. I'm like,
thank you. I appreciate that.
But like, do you guys ever get this, like, sense of, like, the more elite the university, the more in the bag they are with, like, the world of finance, and just, like, that is, like, this prerequisite understanding of, like, how the world works, like, that. It feels like unavoidable.
There's data that says that so I know a little bit about the venture capital industry, because that's right. Who can fund cannabis, because you can't get a bank loan and you can't get money through regular banks. And Julia Boorstin is an announcer, one of the anchors on CNBC, and she just wrote a book called When Women Lead. And in this book, it talks about how I'm not going to remember the exact numbers, but it's something so stunning. It's like 70% of all of the partners who can write checks, who have the ability to, like, write a check at a venture capital firm, went to Harvard or Stanford.
Yeah.
Not just like Ivy League, like, those two schools are where 70%, and they're all white and they're all men. And that's who writes checks. And that's why women get 2% of venture capital funding. 98% of venture capital funding goes to men. So I, you know, just an extra added little cherry on top for your theory.
I mean, like, yeah, I wish that stat was like, you know, 80% of billionaire class traders went to Stanford or Harvard. It's like, no,
well, that's what we need. Like, that's what, I don't know, like, Zeitgang, anybody who's, like, from this world, like, I would love to just, like, have a segment on this show that is, like, you know, just spying on these motherfuckers and, like, telling the truth about what this shit is going on, what is going on, because, like, I have lots of, you know, suspicions based on, like, those people that I've met, but, like, yeah, like, just I don't know, like,
it's a different worldview. I know somebody who went to Stanford and went into VC shit, and, you know, like, went Stanford, hedge funds, then startups.
Yeah,
okay, that was their path, and they're like a sweet person, not, like, hateful or anything, but the way they look at the world is they get to work and they start making numbers move.
Yeah,
that's really, I mean, like, because I've even asked them, I'm like it excites you, and it's like, yeah, you know, but also just to take something from nothing and grow it too is also really fun to see, and to work on something like that too. So there's, like, this person is not as cynical in saying it, but what they engage in is part and parcel of this, like, broader thing. But their worldview is a little more, it's less dark. To them, it's just more benign what they're doing.
But I do think it's, like, a capitalist supremacist, like, wealth supremacist idea that is at the heart of this. And, like, that's also where the media myth comes from, that it's, like, yeah, well, all the people who voted for Trump are fucking idiots. Like, they're just, you know, like, we can just dismiss all of them as idiots. We're the only smart ones. And therefore, we're making decisions on people's behalf. Like, it, you really do see some of that, like, Ayn Randian thinking, like, kind of creep in when you're talking to these, like, Ivy educated people that just, I don't know. Mm-hmm. All I'm going to say is that the people who studied, who published this bullshit study are two Harvard professors. The meta study is from professors of Cincinnati and University of Florida. And I'm
go Bearcats.
Yeah, I'm fucking trusting the state universities and the local universities much more than I am a university that was headed by Larry Summers and has a $53 billion endowment. But yeah, class traders, hit us up on Twitter. Hit us at the, I'll open the DMs. Just, I want to hear the stories y'all got. All right, let's take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll come back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back. And toward the end of last week, Oprah went from her initial position. New York Magazine reached out and were like, hey, so this monster that you helped create is running for Senate in Pennsylvania. And her response was, one of the great things about our democracy is that every citizen can decide to run for public office. Mehmet Oz has made that decision. And now it's up to the residents of Pennsylvania to decide who will represent him.
Mm.
So not very strong take. But Oprah, at the end of last week, did come out and endorse John Fetterman, which I don't know. I don't know if that's going to change anyone's mind. It does feel like it's a like the Fetterman side looking for a mainstream media win, because the mainstream media has just been beating the shit out of them as soon as they got their sights on them and saw a little bit of weakness. And but I don't know. I still think Fetterman's going to do better than whatever the mainstream media is assuming, because he actually has policies.
His polling went up like demonstrably after the debate.
The debate where everyone was like, oh my God.
Because the other thing, when they're asking people about it too, like 76% of people knew somebody who'd been through a stroke.
Yeah. Motherfucker. Yeah.
So they weren't like, they're like, yeah, man, like that shit happens. And I'm not like, that is not a foreign concept to me that you are mortal. So, and especially something as common as that. So like it didn't quite, that's what was so bizarre about that. Like with Oprah, I don't know if it, you know, I don't know how much weight it's going to carry. And I don't even know, honestly, like doing some both sides shit about this, like to start off, like let the people decide. It's like one guy is forced birth.
Yes.
Like, let's be real.
It's a woman's right. He's not forcing anyone. A woman's right, her doctor, her local politician.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And so, like, it is a little bit like, where the fuck were you? But at the same time, I'm hoping most people aren't, like, being like, well, you know me, I can't make a decision until Oprah says something.
Right.
You know, so hopefully it's not, you know, necessarily going to count plus or minus in terms of wind and sales.
I think this is more mainstream media just being like, they're idiots, man. They'll do whatever Oprah tells them. And they'll read a book that she recommends because they recognize that other people will probably be reading that book. And it's fun to read stuff. I don't know that they're going to vote because she did sort. And her statement of endorsing John Fetterman, like the useful thing would have been like, look, I've seen some shit. This guy's like a bad person. And like his you shouldn't trust his like medical credentials, or like his, you shouldn't trust him. And instead she just like kind of voiced support for Fetterman so as not to burn the bridge. But
yeah, speaking of like his marijuana policy, he was going after Fetterman. Remember that ad when like the bong came out of his head? And it's like, he wants to legalize marijuana. And it's just so funny too, because this is why, more than like him just being like just terrible on all the issues, it's the fact that this guy has no like sound beliefs at all, Dr. Oz. Because in one breath, he'll be like, I don't know about his legalize all drugs policy, while later on being like, you know, I'm supportive of medical marijuana. This is a quote, I think with the doctor's involvement, especially for seniors who have end of life issues suffering from pain, I think it's a safer solution than, for example, narcotics in many cases. But it has to be studied. Blah, blah, blah. But then going right back and like, he wants to legalize everything. Like, he's not he's a fucking creature.
Yeah.
That's all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's an ego creature.
But you know, he's good at scoffing at somebody recovering from a stroke on a debate stage. So that's, I guess, counts for something.
I mean, he ran attack ads on the fact that he had gone through a stroke. Anyways, I mean, there's more stuff. Like, you could argue that Oprah is like a proto Joe Rogan, who would like kind of show up and say a bunch of medically dubious, like, so someone would show up. She'd have an expert on, a Jordan Peterson stand-in, in this case, Jenny McCarthy or Dr. Oz, and they'd say a bunch of like medically dubious bullshit about how like there's a pill that'll melt your tummy fat away, and she would just kind of smile and nod, because that, you know, she wasn't saying it, but she was platforming people who were, and then
I mean, Dr. Phil, too, we've seen where that goes. And like watching his like later, like every now and then I like to see what Dr. Phil is talking about. And it's always, it's not even helpful anymore. Like half of it is like, is my trans child a problem? Like is like the headline. And you're like, what the fuck is Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil even doing?
Yeah.
But I don't know. What about you, Alan? Do you get most of your medical takes just from Google, like Jenny McCarthy does, and then goes on to Oprah and talks about being anti-vax?
No, I go to the doctor.
Dr. Phil.
Yeah. Oz, thank you.
It's hard, though. I mean, I think that I am a person that grew up like whatever the doctor said, definitely do it. And I had a really bad accident. I was down in New Orleans for Jazz Fest and riding a bike and I fell off. And it wasn't a very dramatic accident, but I had a lot of really bad injuries. I broke 16 of my teeth. I tore up my shoulder and broke my ribs and my wrist and just was having all of these issues. And the side effects that the medicine were giving me were making me sick. I hit my head because I fainted after taking painkillers that they'd given me at the emergency room. And so it just, I think that when you have like a medical crisis and you're not getting help from the system, I can see and understand how people look for other sources. And it's hard to try to construct a foundation when there's sort of some fundamental things that just don't make sense. And
yeah.
So I understand, like, the impulse for it, but I think that maybe the doctor isn't the best to be the senator. But
or someone who's, in a process, though, of seeing, like, how what they say on TV can help bolster, like, their brand. And if it's, like, aligned with something, they're like, oh, wow, that really juices things if I kind of keep going in this direction, I think, which is really, you know, the incentivization of like dubious medical advice is also just its own issue too.
But I think that's a really smart point that like we have these celebrity doctors at a time when America's healthcare system is like failing American people to such a degree that we're just like, TV doctor, what do you have to say? What do you, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, right. Or a reflection of where we are, where someone is like, I don't know, because I can't afford to go to the actual doctor.
Right.
I tune into Dr. Oz as a fucking last resort. And I think that's, I mean, that's a very bleak reality that we exist in, too.
Nobody ever said Oprah's not a genius for like figuring out what people are going to gravitate towards, you know, and TV doctors. She was right that they were going to gravitate towards them. She was just wrong in her choice of who the TV doctor should be.
Yeah.
Jenny McCarthy was a bad choice.
Yeah. Especially like that interaction where she's just like being asking her, well, where did you find that research? And Jenny McCarthy says, first thing I did, Google. I put in autism and I started my research. And then you're like,
and Oprah replied, thank God for Google. And
she says,
I don't think she was being sarcastic. Like
that
would be the funny thing to say, to be like, oh, great. Well, thank God for Google that started you down that
path. To say it
path.
Earnestly?
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank God for Google, right, audience? Wow, right. Let's give it up for Google, right? And their killer drones on their way.
Ellen, as always, truly a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
Thank you for having me. The podcast is called How to Do the Pot. It's available wherever you listen, and we're at dothepot.com. You can follow us on all the socials at Do the Pot. And if you live in Arkansas, Maryland, Missouri, North Dakota, or South Dakota, cannabis is on the ballot for adult use legalization. Medical is already allowed. So please take a look and everybody vote.
Yeah.
More money in the coffers.
And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes. I found one this morning that I wish that it wasn't the truth for me, but it was like my waiting in cart at my Amazon cart is like about $1.3 million right now for all the things that I have put in there. Like when you have a new baby, there's just so much you throw in there, and I still feel like they're probably bottles, you know, for newborns, and it's a big number now. So I could relate. I need to go in and do some deleting.
Yeah. Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
I guess Twitter. I mean, I'm not really posting anything. I'm just watching the fire from the side.
Yeah, warming your hands.
At Miles of Gray. Yes. Check Jack and I out on our basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. Because we do have Mad Boosties. You want to see us dunk? You got to pay us $1 million. Mm-hmm. And then we will let it fly.
Play
and also...
ball. Off a trampoline.
Oh, yes, exactly. And my weed and reality TV synergy podcast, 420 Day Fiancé, where we talk about 90 Day Fiancé and all that good trashy shit. Some tweets that I like. Really, one of the first, it's from Brody Gupta, at Brody Gupta tweeted, Free speech defenders are never like, protect my right to call myself prom queen of the fog. They're always like, our men in blue die from fentanyl trick-or-treating every day, and we won't let them say the N-word? which really feels like this fucking state of things. So, that's just kind of what Twitter is at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just liking dumb tweets, like favorite movie lines, and it's the scene where Roy Scheider first sees Jaws and two frame of that, and he's doing the chumming. Jaws comes out of the water, and then it's him saying, holy shit, it's Jaws, instead of, I think we're going to need a bigger boat. And that is where I'm at. Holy shit, it's Jaws. You can find, that was the subtext to that line, by the way. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
This is a track, since Election Day is tomorrow, and you know, we want to avoid as much fuckery as possible. This track called Clean Race, you know, by Scotty. This is a reggae. I mean, like, let's run a clean race.
Okay.
Now, we're not talking about racial shit here. That's why I said, that's why I prefaced it with the election is coming up. We don't want fuckery. Let's run a clean race here. This is by Scotty. This is from the Mighty Trojan Sound, like Trojan Vaults album. So just some nice reggae, you know, some deep, deep dub. Just put that on. And prepare yourself to vote or turn in your ballot or whatever, and maybe have to be confronted by weirdos cosplaying as some Call of Duty character.
Every 100% participation from Zeitgeist listeners. You gotta vote, y'all. All right. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.